And get started. I'll call the meeting to order, the TCEQ Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. We will go through our agenda, and first of all, I'll call the roll, the members that are here. All but three are physically here, and Mike Nassie just indicated he's on the phone. Charles or Cyrus, are you on the phone? Okay. They are absent at this point. If they happen to call in or arrive, we'll make note of that. So as usual, I'll indicate that we have a public policy for our committee meetings, and we welcome input. However, we don't expect a long meeting today by any means, but we have a reasonableness standard on input. Also, I'll open it for any general comments from anybody before we get started. All right, we'll hit to the first item on our agenda. Welcome, Tim Jones, to our committee. And I'll ask him to say a few things for us to get to know him a little bit. So tell us a little about yourself, Tim.
Good morning, everyone. Again, my name's Tim Jones. I'm with Samsung Austin Semiconductor here in Austin, Texas. I'm the manager of the environmental group, and I oversee our environmental policy and regulatory affairs, which extends to working with the city, the state, and federal government on various issues. Been in the industry almost 20 years now. Background is started out in hazardous waste many years ago with various companies, worked my way through, came to Texas, spent a little time with TCEQ, worked in small business, local government assistance. Actually, that's how I became familiar with Ron. From there, I was recruited on out to Samsung and been there for 11 years. So it's kind of a quick, brief history of where I've been and how I got here.
Great. Glad to have you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. We'll go ahead and go to the next item, which is a review of the draft 2016 annual report of the advisory committee. I sent it out about 10 days ago and sent a minor revision a couple of days ago on a footnote. Do we have any comments, concerns, suggested revisions? I'm very open. And before we get any comments, I'll reiterate for the audience is the basis of the action are the items discussed on, I think it's page 4 or 5, but anyway, I pulled that from our minutes for the committee. So just pull the main items, and I checked it also with the notes that I have. Did Cyrus or Charles just dial in?
Yeah, this is Cyrus Reed. I'm on the line. Sorry.
Okay,
I'm
good.
A few minutes late.
Glad to have you. I don't expect any non-members to identify themselves. That's okay because people we don't do that in the audience either. So glad to have you. We were just talking about the draft 2016 annual report. So do we have? And it's in a similar format as we've had the last few years. And again, I'm open to change. I'll open it up now for comments or motions.
I move.
Go ahead.
I move approval.
Okay, you move.
We move approval.
Jointly move approval.
I couldn't tell who was first, but I'll just say that. How about Don Lee?
Always ahead of me.
Okay.
These are always
on
the.
Okay. Bennett has made a motion to approve and seconded by Don. Before we call the vote, do we have any discussion? No discussion. We'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those
opposed? Aye.
Those opposed, no. All right. The motion passes. And I will, as implied on the draft, I plan to send that out on Monday. And I will also confirm with Shelley or Ron or someone just to make sure I'm sending it to the right channels. I think I've got the address and everything, but I'll also send it via email so you can post it, do whatever you need to that way. All right. Good. Next, we've got an update. I think some of us are aware of at least one bill and a companion bill that's pending in the legislature now. And I'll put this as a general item for any proposed legislation. Ron or someone else from TCEQ, you want to comment on it?
Good morning. I'm Ronald Hatlow with the TCEQ's Tax Relief Program.
There's been two bills filed that we know of. That's all we've seen. It's SB 2028 and HB 4219. The only things we know that impact this program so far this year. As far as discussing the bill, it's kind of agency policy that we don't discuss legislation. But we're here to answer any questions.
What were those numbers again?
2028 Senate bill and House Bill 4219. I've got copies of them over here on the table if anybody wants them.
They're okay. Identical.
Ron, could you or somebody else just describe what changes, how they, if they passed, and they haven't had a hearing yet, so it's getting late in the session, but what impact they would have on the program?
Thanks, Cyrus. Ron is talking to someone. He will respond in just a minute. And we certainly recognize TCU does not take positions on the bill.
Right.
But I think the question from Cyrus was, what does the bill do, if you want to provide us a summary?
We can't speak for or against legislation.
Yes, we understand that.
Well, we can provide a summary. Okay. Those of you around last session, Kurt Watson filed a bill, Senate Bill 1469, that never came out of committee. These are kind of follow-ups to what the committee substitute was. It adds three sections to 1131, subsection O, which requires the agency to adopt a list of equipment that is wholly used as pollution control equipment, similar to what the Tier 1 table is, and then equipment... We have to review that every 5 years, and we have to review it with the idea that any equipment that is on the list that is no longer qualifies as 100% pollution control equipment must be removed from the list. The subsection P...
Just to clarify, in the way you would know if it no longer qualifies is through the reapplication process, correct?
Well...
Primarily?
We would know a specific use determination might no longer be valid through that reapplication process. The re-review of the items on the list every 5 years, we're required to look at whether it's still used as pollution control, whether there's a rule being met and it meets the conditions of the rule. That's what would get it off the list. No different than the non-exclusive list under K. We have to have evidence to remove it from the list. Another thing that subsection O does that isn't in the law currently is if the chief appraiser determines that there's equipment on the list that a use determination has been issued for, but the chief appraiser does not believe that it's pollution control equipment, they do have the right to set aside the exemption and force you to refile with us.
Okay, so to request, and I've read the bill too, but...
Well,
but
yeah.
So the chief appraiser, at his discretion, well, I say discretion, assuming he has valid reasons, can request reapplication.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
But they already have that right.
Right. As far as...
Yeah. Subsection P creates a staggered re-review of applications that are for items that are not on that new list in subsection O. That would be tier twos, tier threes, tier fours, any equipment that's been removed from the list. In that reapplication, every 5 years, you would reapply to the agency with, and then you reapply for the exemption request with the appraisal district if it was approved. And it's staggered out for the applications approved before 2018 are staggered out through a 5 year period with a few applications each year, so that there's not an overburden of workload on the agency.
So just for clarification, if you're granted an exemption that's not on the pre-approved list, then you have to reapply every 5 years?
Good morning. This is Charles Allred. I am late.
Hi, Charles.
Through the first two sections of the bill, that yes. Then you get to subsection Q, And under Q, that's where the actual stagger is, and that's right. But if you go back to subsection 1 and then you look at section 2 of the bill, currently if you filed for an exemption under 1131, under 1143C of the tax code, you are not required to reapply on an annual basis with the appraisal district. They're removing 1131 from subsection C. They're putting it in 1143B, which requires you to reapply on an annual year. But if you go back up to subsection O of 1131, it says except for items that are on the list.
Right.
So, yes. Do you have to apply every 5 years, or do you have to apply every year?
So, and Don might not let you answer this question, but I'm just curious, what are they trying to accomplish in general?
Oh, I
can't answer that.
Yeah, I didn't write the legislation. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I thought you might have insight from the last time, too, since it's the same thing. Yeah. So,
can I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Back to the authority granted the chief appraiser in that first section, how is that different from the authorities that already exist under current law, if it is?
1131 says that the chief appraiser must accept our determination, and then 1143B or C allows them to require a annual reapplying for the exemption if they wish, but you have to notify them within writing and give them time in order to do that.
They can send out the local application that you have to file either once when you get the exemption or annually whenever they choose to say, if they did an inspection and they said, I don't think that equipment's being used for pollution control, then they can require you to reapply on the local level.
So, Greg, is that an issue of saying, we don't think you're using it the way you described in your application that got approved? Is that?
Or if the use changed.
Right. If the use changed from how you, chief appraiser believes that it's no longer being used in the way that was described in the application that was granted, then he can say, you got to reapply.
Right.
And we're no longer going to recognize this. But he can't just say, he still has to honor the original determination by TCEQ, and it's a fact issue of whether that property is used in the same manner that was previously determined or not.
That's my understanding.
Is that right?
In some chief appraisers, there's one or two out there that you file annually just to make sure that their paperwork, and I think that was due to MAPS review a few years ago. So,
and this bill would put in a process to split determinations between those who say, well, these are on the predetermined list, they don't get reviewed, and everything else gets reviewed every 5 years, has to come back to TCEQ every 5 years. Do you think that's right?
I think that's right.
Okay. Any further questions?
By the way, this is helpful because I've been every once in a while looking at that bill and going, what does it do?
I was trying to figure out what's the practical effect.
Ron, this is Roland Beamer. It doesn't change if something's on the pre-approved list, cooling towers, it comes off. Those people do not have to reapply every 5 years. If they got cooling towers in 2005, they've got it. Is that my understanding? Is that correct?
So you're asking if certain property's been grandfathered in?
Yes. They applied in, say, 2005 when cooling towers were on the pre-approved list. They got it. They made the application to the local appraisal district. They still have it. They don't.
But you can ask to have it reapply for it.
Right.
Not if it's on the pre-approved list.
Well, but it's not on the pre-approved list anymore.
Thank you.
We have a list. We have two lists. We have a tier one table and we have the non-exclusive list that's in subchapter K. Subsection O doesn't say what list we're talking about. It's the same list if we're adopting a new list or whatever. But currently, the Tier 1 table does not include cooling towers, and in fact, it has an item under that specific excludes cooling towers. Under subsection Q of this bill, if you received a cooling tower in 2005, you would have to reapply with the agency in 2019. So you wouldn't get a positive use determination because it's no longer on the list. But I believe you can go back to the chief appraiser having that discretion and saying the cooling towers, we believe the cooling towers are no longer pollution control, and requesting the reapplication.
I'd have to read this again, but I thought the bill was prospective.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, it wouldn't affect prior use determinations.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, there's nothing in this bill that would change a prior use determination. This is all having us re-review things on a regular basis, or having the chief appraiser ask that you refile.
Okay.
But no, this doesn't change anything that's previously been done by us.
Is that just for new property? They can do that any time. But for example, if 1131 were repealed, that doesn't mean everything behind is, I mean, the past is wiped out. It's just going forward, typically.
If 1131 were repealed, I would retire and I wouldn't care.
Okay. All right. Good answer. All right. Thanks, Ron.
Sure.
Unless there are other questions. Roland, anything else?
I'm
just a puzzle look. Okay.
Okay. I found that helpful. Thank
okay,
you.
Good. Anyone on the phone have questions before we move forward? Okay.
All good here.
All right. Okay. We're moving forward pretty fast then. Item number 5, we're already there, an update on the core data form. And the reason I put this on there is just an update. As you know, several meetings ago, we'd indicated we'd had some concerns that this could cause some confusion or whatever. So, but I'm hearing it's turning out better than it was feared. So
we had concerns that it would be a big issue, filling out the core data form and filling out our application as two separate documents and trying to put them together. In when we first started this in December or so, it was an issue with the first few, but it's turned out that people are actually telling us it's no harder than filling out a regular application. And they have a core data form they previously filled out. They just copy the information off of it. And it's been a relatively easy process. We haven't seen an increase in notice of deficiency letters related to information on there. I mean, it's been pretty seamless. Everything's working well. Our new database functions really well by using the core data stuff. It's kind of hard to get information back out once you put it in, but that's the nature of a database.
Yeah.
Especially when two people own it.
Right. Okay.
Would you like an update on our e-permits application?
Yes, please.
Okay. The agency has this goal to turn every application into an electronic application, so there's no more paper going back and forth. We're one of the last programs to get into that. We've been working with the developer for the last 3 or 4 months. We have been told that by the end of this fiscal year, we will have an e-permits application where applicants will be able to file electronically with us. There'll be no paper sent back and forth. Any attachments would be attached electronically. All of the review process would be electronically. If we sent you an NOD, we would simply unlock those sections of the application form that need to be corrected and tell you to fix them. And then once it's done and it's approved, you get an email with a web address that tells you to click on this address, and here's all your documents. Here's your use determination in your letter. The appraisal district will get the same email saying this application has been filed here's what's in the application, here's the positive use determination. So that we won't be mailing things back and forth. Everything will be out there electronically. You'll pay your fee electronically. The basic administrative review, you fill in all the boxes and you pay your fee. It's administratively complete when you push send if we accept it. So it should reduce the amount of time involved on both our part and on the applicant's part in responding to NODs and everything. And it should just, other programs have found that it has made their program a lot more efficient. And we expect that with this one.
Good concept. What occurred to me is I think you're saying this is not an option, it's mandatory.
It's not an option in any other program in this agency. Once they switch over, this is the only way you can do
so
that.
So not even a transition period if while people build some trust in the new system? Yeah. So you is know, it going to be any parallel time or anything
I don't
like
know
that?
That we discussed that, but I think this is a cold turkey. Switch it over, force you to do it electronically. Okay. We have one applicant who's been doing applications the last 25 years who uses a black Sharpie. And it took us 10 years to get him to give us an email address. So we expect to have an issue with him come spring when he files an application. But other than that, I mean, everybody types them up anyway. I don't see any difference between typing into your computer and transmitting electronically than typing it up and making copies and mailing them to me.
I'm for it. I'm just anticipating.
And I'm saying, the rest of the agency has done this. I mean, you do all of your permitting this way, even very large permits are all done this way. We're just a little drop in a bucket, a little small, relatively easy program to work with. If the complicated people can do it without complaining, I think they can do ours.
And as I mentioned earlier, if there's a mistake, for example, if you happen to click the wrong county when you drop down or whatever, you anticipate those would be pretty easy to change?
Oh, yeah. But it'd just be a matter of us sending you a notice of deficiency, telling you you chose the wrong county, and us unlocking that box.
Okay.
And you can...
Before you send it, will there be a chance...
Excuse me. Before you send it, will there be a chance for somebody to go back over the whole thing to look at it again to make sure... You know, to proofread their own stuff and then make changes before they send it.
The nature of the e-permits program is such that it takes really two people to do it. The assumption is that you'll have somebody complete your application for you and send it on to a manager or supervisor who then has signature authority. And they'll look at it, and that's your review process, is that second person looks at it, approves it, signs it electronically, and that's when it gets transmitted. You could have the same person be both cases, but it takes two steps to send it. So you do have that opportunity to look at everything you've sent, change anything you haven't sent. Once you send it, you can't change anything without us unlocking it for you.
But Ron, can I print it out, a draft?
I'm sure you can.
Okay.
And it'll be on your screen. Basically, like our application form, a bunch of little boxes of stuff in it.
Just a draft. Print it out so you can check it, manually check it.
But it basically requires two IP addresses, sounds like, to get it approved, which is a checking mechanism.
Right. And the signature process for e-permits requires I think it's certified signature is the term they use, for it to be a valid signature, and that requires like a driver's license number or some identifier that the state can verify you are who you are. And that's where your signature authority will rely with. We see that a lot on applications anyway. Even when a consultant completes the application, it's a company person who usually signs it.
Okay. And I might be getting too detailed here, but for example, if I don't want to give you my driver's license, if I'm paranoid about identity theft or whatever, I could use my senior consulting license.
I'm sure there's systems built into it so that you can do alternative ways of creating that authorized signature.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what. We've never used it. I mean, this is the first for us, too.
Okay.
We're excited by it because we've got a new database that works a lot easier for us. This e-permits will be on one side, we'll be on the other side, and we'll talk to each other. And mm-hmm. we're not going to be shuffling files, printing paper, making copies or anything. It's all going to be electronic. It's all going to be right there for us.
Okay. If there's any confidential information that someone needs to submit,
you would make it as an attachment and send it electronically with it marked confidential, and it would be segregated off and be confidential. You could look at it and we could look at it. Nobody else could.
Okay.
It's not a lot different than what we do now. We scan it in, label it as confidential, and nobody else can see it in our database.
Okay.
And so this is really just bringing to this exemption process the same technology and processes that y'all are using for other permitting processes out there.
Correct. And in fact, the reason it's being developed so quickly is they're not really developing anything new. They're just taking bits and pieces of stuff they've done for other people and making it fit us.
And it's implemented, and there are people who are applying for permits from TCEQ doing this same thing. I'm trying to make the point, obviously, that
it's out there.
Change always brings some resistance, but in this case, this is change that's been proven, and you all have worked through issues, and you've got a large community of people interacting with TCEQ exactly with this technology, and it's accepted.
Correct. So you can't file for a stormwater permit or renew your stormwater permit without going to the stormwater e-permits website and filling out your information there. So, you know, as I say, we're one of the last permitting-type programs to be involved in it. They did all the major ones first, and now they're working down and getting the rest of us. But I mean, it's an agency initiative. They'll eliminate paper use and
sure.
improve efficiency and allow me to work from home or Colorado or wherever I happen to be at the time.
Yeah, I understand. Public access. Will the public have access to these applications?
No. If there's public access, if those of you use the Central Registry and a core data form, you know, you type in an RN and it'll bring up a list of every permit that you have. If you do that today, you'll see any exemptions you've received in the last 4 or 5 years. The application number will show up and it'll say that it's, you know, tax relief and it's an active, meaning that it's a positive use determination. But that's all you see is a number. There's a potential that we can actually link the application and the use determination to that where you could view them, but what you would be viewing would be non-confidential information. It'd be no different than we fulfill an open records request for an application. We go in and redact the phone numbers and email addresses and billing information and anything that should really be confidential. We just redact it from the document before we send it.
Will the public have an opportunity to, are there standard canned reports that you envision in there that a list by county, anything like that?
It would be nice to be able to do that. Whether we have the money to develop that or not, I don't know.
Okay.
Whether we'll go forward. We did that up till about the time we hit 8,000 or 9,000 applications, and then it became a little more difficult to do those kinds of reports. So it's been years since we've done them.
Okay. Not intending to grill you, just trying to get more informed.
No, same concerns.
And yeah, okay.
Up until a couple of years ago, well, even now, I mean, I do an application review. I take the application and I spread it out on my desk so I can see every page at the same time. And looking at it on a screen and only seeing part of it at a time is going to be a new learning experience for me. I like to be able to jump back and forth and see what I'm looking at.
You know, I would think you'd have the capability if something on page 5 disagrees with page 2, it'll maybe have a, if it's a NAICS code or whatever.
Yeah, we're building a lot of stuff into it.
You just need 6 screens on your desk.
I've got 2. But, yeah.
Yeah.
It's what we've seen of it. It's pretty interesting. I mean, as you go through the application, you hit that question about whether it's one of those items on the list that's incremental cost difference. If you say no, you go to the next question. If you say yes, well, you get a new menu. And it says, okay, which of these 6 items is it? Okay, what's the original cost? What's the new cost? And all that. But you don't see any of that. If it's the Tier 1 application, you never see anything about a Tier 2 or Tier 3 application. It just doesn't appear because you said Tier 1.
Yeah, right.
So it's going to streamline that application process for everybody. They only see what they need to see.
If I remember correctly,
filing with the appraisal district, the user currently has to file, once he gets his use determination and everything, files that with the chief appraiser. And my question is, since you're sending all this stuff, does that take the place of that, or does that still have to happen?
No. 1131 currently requires us to send a copy of the positive use determination to the appraisal district at the same time that we send it to the applicant.
And they still have to file?
They still have to file.
Yeah, the exemption is not active until you fill the local application out.
Okay.
And for 8 or 9 years, we've been allowed to do that electronically. We just haven't done it because it's not an electronic document. So we haven't gone to that point. This follows through with that idea that we'll send all of our correspondence to the appraisal district and the applicant electronically. The applicant's still going to have to fill out that form, print out a copy of the use determination, and send it in, unless the appraisal district goes electronic and allows them to file it electronically. And the document gets going to look just like what we do now. It's just going to be a PDF and in an email for you to click open.
I'll give you a thought to consider, and I'm only speaking as one member, but it would be nice if we could see a prototype or something before it goes online.
It'll be extensively tested before it goes online, including us bringing in outside people that file applications and letting them try and break
it. Good.
And we're hoping to be able to do that remotely so somebody somewhere else in another state who files can actually try and break it from out of state and see if it'll work. It works. I'm saying e-permits works now for everybody else. Right. And as long as we're sticking with pieces of stuff that works, we assume it'll work for us. But it will be tested before it goes live. And even I've said it'll be ready by the end of the fiscal year. I don't see us going live until January of next year.
I'm just referring to my past experience. It's easier to fix it on the front end rather than roll it out and then try to.
There are enough times where I've had to do data entry twice in two different databases because the change didn't quite do what we needed it to do yet. So I had to use the old one, but I had to use the new one because it needed to be there too.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want that happening either.
I'm not questioning your ability to do your job, I'm sure.
It's computers.
Right.
The more they help you, the more trouble they cause.
I understand.
It's been that way since the mid-70s, and it'll be that way forever.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on this topic? All right.
Thanks, great initiative. Thanks, a great thing.
So, well, one more question. Apparently, you don't foresee any budget problems as you're going forward since you're kind of midway in.
With this program? We're fee-funded. As long as you people file applications and pay us to do them,
we
exist. If you stop filing applications, we got a problem.
Okay.
But that'll be a lagging problem. It'll take a while to catch up. But we're fee-funded. I mean, we show up as a budget writer every 2 years.
Well, that's logic, but I know sometimes in my experience it could be pulled. But anyway, that's just a question.
Sure. I mean,
sure.
Somebody could always eliminate us.
Yeah.
And that would be the easiest way to do it. Kill off the rider.
Yeah.
Collect all the fees you want. You can't spend them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate that update. All right. Now we're in the area of any old business.
Bob, I'd like to ask the same one I did last time.
Okay.
Is there any changes on the hearings for the HRSC, or have they not happened yet, or just the status? I don't have to.
Good morning. Good morning. Don Redmond with TCQ Environmental Law Division. There's been no court decision since your last meeting on the HRSC litigation. To recap, the HRSC appeals were separated into two groups of categories of applicants. The Tier 3 group was consolidated and tried together, and the Tier 4 group was consolidated together at the trial court level. Trial court has upheld all of TCQ's decisions on the HRSC applications. The Tier 3 were on an earlier track and the trial court's decision was appealed. That appeal was transferred to the El Paso Court of Appeals. It's been fully briefed, and a hearing is expected in April of this year on the Tier 4 group. It's a later track. It's been appealed. It's in the Austin Court of Appeals. There's still one more round of briefing, and then I would expect a hearing maybe sometime this summer on the Tier 4 category.
Thank you.
Okay, catching up with that. All right. Any other business, new or old? One last opportunity for anybody from the public or from the phone to express any concerns or comments about anything within our purview of our committee, whether it's on the agenda or not.
Thanks for the updates, Ron.
Okay. Any other comments from the committee members? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
I so move.
We have a motion from Wayne Frizzell to adjourn. We have a second from Paul Kuhn. So those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, aye. Aye. Meeting is adjourned at 10:35. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Well, I think I may show Bob something here.
This is an official meeting?
Those were my words exactly.